are listening to Live to Sustain. This week we will interview Aaron Taylor and talk to him about his experience in sustainable fashion, and we will talk a little bit about sustainability in the news. In the news this week on Live to Sustain, we're talking about fashion. Our guest later, Aaron Taylor, has a past in sustainable fashion, and so that's motivated our news topic this week. Laura, what did you find in the news this week about sustainable fashion?
I wanted to talk about a couple different sustainable fashion brands and the different approaches that they're taking to achieve sustainability. So one brand that I've been following is called The Reformation, and they originally had built their brand on the idea that their clothes were produced locally here in California, and they are a sustainable fashion brand. So anyways, I was shopping at their store recently, and I was trying on some clothes, and I looked at the tags, and I saw that they were made in China. And so I went and I talked to the manager about it, and I was like, what's up with this? I thought you guys were all about the made locally clothes and stuff. And they told me that they had been experiencing production problems, or basically they were saying in order to scale their business to make sustainable fashion accessible to everyone, they were having problems meeting their production needs with local factories. And so they've now started going to China and sourcing from international factories. So I thought that was really interesting because, you know, I want to support brands that, use local manufacturers and stuff. And I'm seeing what a challenge it is financially for those brands to succeed. And then I was taking a look at their sustainability report, which they put on their website, thereformation.com, and they had said that their goal was to have 75% of their LA workers earning a living wage, and currently they're only at 18.5%. So I thought that was really interesting that they have this factory here in LA, but they are not able to pay everyone a livable wage, and on top of that, they're going to China, and it just seemed like such a struggle.
That is interesting. I mean, they started out as a sustainability brand, and now sounds to me like they're really kind of just any other brand. I mean, it sounds like they have the sustainability focus, and they want to do that for the future, but they're going to have to kind of start over, right, and work up to being a sustainable fashion company as opposed to just.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that over in Asia, they do have a lot of innovations in manufacturing, and they do say that they're denim factory is supposedly wasting a lot less water, so that's something. I mean, I don't know. I think there is room for there to be international manufacturing, but is the reason it's international is because there's, you know, cheap labor over there, or is it because they've got really nice facilities? But so then, just to contrast that with another sustainable fashion brand, it's called Elizabeth Suzanne, and this is a company that's based in Nashville, Tennessee, I believe, and they are making everything in the U.S. They have a relatively small showroom, and they make everything to order. So you place an order online, and then they'll start putting that into production. So there's very little waste. But on the downside, their lead time is 6 to 7 weeks. So you order something from them, and it takes 6 to 7 weeks for these people to hand make your clothes. But they're all paid well, they're all, you know, living very comfortably, and it seems like a nice work environment. So I think that's great. But then, you know, on the flip side, there's that super long lead time. The prices, you know, are definitely higher than what you would see at your typical fast fashion brand. So there's this trade-off, you know, you want something that's sustainable, but then it gets expensive and it takes a long time, and it just seems like a real challenge to create a successful, sustainable business.
Well, I guess we should be thankful for companies who are out there trying it and, you know, learning what is the right business model. It sounds like it's a challenge. Awesome, thanks. All right, here with us today at the Live to Sustain studios is Aaron Taylor. Aaron is passionate about sustainability. Aaron is also a longtime friend of mine. I mean, 4 or 5 years is a long time. But Aaron and I met when we used to live in Ocean Beach in San Diego. We were neighbors. And lately, we're talking a lot about sustainability. Tell me about yourself and your interest in sustainability.
So I sit on the board for a nonprofit in the surf industry that does surfboard recycling, re-rip. And from there, just stem this whole concept of you know, how does the surf industry, who loves the ocean, how does it really, you know, protect and promote a more sustainable lifestyle? So we developed some products in the swim and that surf industry of made from recycled materials to kind of just be a beacon or an inspiration for people to really want to move in that direction.
Okay, so I want to talk more about your swimwear company, Odina. You mentioned that when you were younger, you were really, you know, upset about the pollution in the ocean and you wanted to do something sustainable, so you branched into the sustainable fashion. So when you're talking about sustainability, what does that mean? Like, what was sustainable about the business?
There's, you know, a lot of our focus was based on, I guess, carbon footprint and impact. So, and also inspiring and encouraging people to be aware of their surroundings and their environment. The fabric themselves was all made in California, made from recycled materials, plastic bottles. And we used, you know, water-based inks when we printed. And that was all dye sublimation, printed on recycled paper, heat transferred. All of our sewing manufacturing was done in Los Angeles, so we kept everything local as possible. And our website was run off of wind power. All of our marketing material was based on as sustainable fabrics as possible. We did a lot of banner prints on recycled plastic bottles. We did all of our catalogs, sugarcane paper, recycled cotton, everything with water-based inks, all made locally. So every little bit can, you know, sum up to make a large impact.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So you're not doing that company anymore. What happened there? What were the challenges that you faced when you were working on this business?
With every company, you're working through the systems and the structures that you create as a team. So the people at the top are kind of blanketing and creating the structures at which everyone else works under and works through to create success. And if there's any disconnect with the top tier players, then there's going to be a disconnect to all the players below that, you know, believe in the product and want to see it come to life.
Mm-hmm.
But they, if you stop believing in the people that are running it, then you're going to like kind of lose that focus. So we kind of had just some differences in overall vision of where we wanted the company to go. And when you start looking at long-term plans, that's where you make decisions based on that, you know, like longevity of who do you want to be and what impact you want to create. And that's where you need to have core values aligned for all the people invested.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this was more of a personality conflict or a creative conflict more than it was a logistical problem in terms of like, oh, we just weren't able to source the material at an affordable price or that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's anytime you are working hard from your passion and not, you know, being compensated fully into your pocket, the strain becomes tougher. You know, mm-hmm. your margins are tighter when you're dealing in the organic, sustainable field. And so you have less dollars to spend in all the different arenas of marketing and, you know, just paying your people and production and R&D. So all of those elements become slightly strained, and then that stress factor leads into the relationships that are, you know, developed. So it was a lot of different things that all kind of came together to, you know, make that final decision. But ultimately, you know, it was a decision based on what was our initial goal, was to shift the consciousness or the swimwear industry to look at sustainable fabrics. And by the end of it, we went from being one of two companies in the world to being, you know, one of almost 30 companies that were using similar fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did make a fairly large effort and a fairly large impact to shift that consciousness and awareness. And in the end of the day, it was kind of like, well, shoot, we did what we set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we still want to be pulling the strings, you know, and unraveling this sweater any further?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a good time for us to walk away?
So what do you think are the most important lessons that you learned from that experience?
Stay true to your passion. Stay true to your business plan and your gut feelings, your intuition. When you see a niche, when you see a need in the market, hone in on it, stay focused, and, you know, perfect and innovate to be a leader in that niche.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned some, like, disagreements amongst the management. So what did you find that really worked in the business? What were they doing right?
It was little bits of a lot of things. And I think that was maybe where we got a little distracted, is we tried to maybe do too much, you know, with limited resources.
Like too many products? Like, you think it would have better to have focused on just a couple products?
So that was kind of one of our last little movements, was we were like, okay, we want to trim down the SKU numbers, which is like the total number of products or styles, and trim down the total number of colors. And so with that conscious effort, you're creating an essential core to your business. And when you hone in on your core, you can allocate so much more resources to those lesser items, which becomes very, you know, impactful. So I think what we were doing really well was creating a global network of awesome eco advocates, or ambassadors, as we called them. So we had many true believers, followers, endorsers that wanted our product to succeed and really worked hard to help us get there. So we had a very core following of believers in this concept. And I think that's something that we were excelling at, was creating a great group of people that just loved the impact that we were creating.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good. And so you mentioned that the swimwear was made from recycled bottles and other recycled plastics. Was there like any other materials, like organic cotton, that you worked with? Or
so throughout the 6 years, the fabric kind of saw some innovations, and we were constantly pushing our suppliers and our fabric manufacturers to keep innovating. Every season it was new conversations about what can we do more of. So initially the fabrics, we actually even worked with some corn fabric, and it just, you know, didn't hold its elasticity. And then it was 50% recycled, you know, pre-consumer waste. So it's just kind of like excess that they just recycled, with quotes there. And then it moved towards the end, in the sixth year of our journey, we were using 100% recycled nylon that came from post-consumer fishing nets that they pulled out of the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
And the fabric was so well developed that it could actually be recycled into new fabric. So if by the end of the, you know, life of these swimsuits or jackets or whatever material whatever product we were making, you could actually recycle it again into new fabric.
That's awesome.
So, and that was closing the loop on this synthetic fabric, which is the ultimate goal, or hopefully becomes the ultimate goal of the fashion industry, is to close loop on their material production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I feel like there's a lot of problems in the fashion industry with the textile sourcing, and so there are these new sustainable fashion brands. And what do you think the biggest problem right now is that's keeping that from becoming mainstream? Is it just that there's not enough scale to produce everything, or are people not interested in spending more money? Like, what do you think is the biggest challenge that's facing the sustainable fashion industry right now?
Over the last 20 plus years, we have developed a culture that undervalues the production of clothing. That is the largest factor that leads to people purchasing very cheap, very, you know, short-lasting, and very, you know, like unfair waged produced goods. That is the largest factor.
Mm-hmm. So just educating people and letting them know, you know, why their clothing is cheap and like why they should spend more and why it's worth it. Education, would you say, is the greatest obstacle, or just changing people's attitudes?
I think the attitude is basically reflects, you know, an appreciation. Is how do we get people to appreciate products again in the fashion industry, you know, that are made and sourced ethically? So it comes from the brands that choose to make products ethically, and then they choose to highlight that, and that becomes what makes them stand apart. And as the culture shifts to appreciate ethically sourced goods, it will sort itself out. You know, but in a political world sense, you know, if we could eliminate, you know, child labor and, you know, basically slave labor, if we can kind of even the playing field for just, you know, work pay, standard of living, you know, you're going to see a balance in price of goods all across the country in all markets. So fashion just was the best at exploiting it, and at the fastest rate. So are they the only ones to blame? No, not at all. They just pioneered it.
I mean, it would be nice the day when, you know, competition is not based on price, right? It's like, it's based on maybe the sustainability of the product. You know, was it sustainably produced? You know, produced, and that's what people, I feel like, should be competing on. You know, the people over profits.
So, and that's the changing the core value of the appreciation. So as you shift the culture to appreciate those values, then that becomes the most important factor. Is how was it made, where was it made, and why did you make it?
Great. So what's next for you? Tell us something that you're working on right now.
I'm currently consulting for a few brands. I have really focused in the sustainable genre, just brands that are making positive impact on the world. And my current client that I am just so passionate about is Golden Coast Mead. It's fermented honey. So basically more mead, more bees, you know, more thrive. So it's, I'm really excited to see his company grow. Just the whole, you know, multitude of what happens when you grow the bee population. The plants that are involved in, you know, pollinating and giving the bees honey, and it's some 10,000, you know, flowers, pollen goes into each sip of mead. So the amount of flowers and plants that have to be thriving for mead to thrive is amazing, but the direct response of mead becoming popular is that there's just going to be that many more plants, that many more flowers. So the impact is amazing ecologically and, You know, we were talking about working with hops farmers to do, you know, kind of like a cyclical farming cycle. So we embed some clover plants into their farm so that the clover plants refurbish and regenerate the soil so that it doesn't become all very dust bowl, you know, like depleted. So it's kind of like this product has the ability to kind of even revitalize an existing very popular beer market by replenishing the soils and these large growing areas. So there's a lot of environmental impact that I'm really excited about. Yeah, and they're just, I mean, it's a great tasting product. It's gluten-free. Yeah, so there's just a lot of really cool things. It's all made locally. Yeah, I just really excited about the mead right now.
Cool. All right, so Adam has a few questions that he wants to wrap up with.
So we have a few questions that we ask everybody. To start, what is one thing you make sure to do every day in order to live to sustain?
I bring my reusable coffee cup, which happens to be insulated also, everywhere with me. It has become, you know, my child little blankie. And I swear it's like I feel weird when I don't have it. And I have actually created the policy and the belief that if I forget my coffee cup, then I also choose not to have coffee. So that is my own fault, or I pay the price. And I've actually bought reusable cups on the spot to pay the price and remind myself to always remember.
Wow. So that's definitely something that you're doing every day.
Every day.
And that's great. I think, you know, one small habit has a large effect, right? Do you, you know, maybe add one more to that, right?
Just of course. And yeah, I've definitely expanded from there. And the inspiration came from watching the documentary Plastic Paradise, and I did a plastic cleanse for 21 days. And I just saw how many places that I would go. It was like plastic cup, plastic cup, plastic cup. And I would just, holy crap.
Yeah, when you start thinking about it, it really...
It adds up. It adds up.
It's a lot. So question number two, what is something you admittedly could do better when it comes to being sustainable?
Definitely, my compost habits are not perfect. We are composting, but it's lackluster. I mean, it's better than going to the landfill for sure, but it's not really thriving yet. And then, you know, packaging, when it comes from Amazon or just in the grocery store, just being really conscious of the packaging that our products come in and making choices to support companies that use better packaging.
Absolutely. Excellent. So that leads into our third question, actually, which is, what is one sustainable brand you like right now and why?
Man, there's so many good ones right now, but one that I'm really excited about, just because it fills my niche, is the Cozm. It's the, and then Cozm, KOZM.com. These guys are some of the founders of Volcom, and they are just yogi surfer guys that are like, yo, how do we make sustainable yoga attire for men? And I'm all on board. So they're using recycled cotton, so post-consumer recycled cotton, to make pants and yoga shorts and t-shirts, and it's awesome. I love their stuff. It's amazing, and they're just growing. They're fresh. They're new. They're out of Costa Mesa, but they're going to be, you know, the active wear for men. They're going to be the Lululemon, but all sustainable.
Awesome. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for sitting down. And that was cool. That was informative. You know, I, you know, live to sustain, learning about sustainability and teaching to others. And I think I learned a ton, and I do every time I dig into sustainability. And I think you've taught whoever, you know, is listening a lot as well. So.
Well, every time I get into it, I, you know, I relight the fire of why I make these decisions, why I make these important, you know, passionate you know, investments. So it's really just about making that choice one little one at a time to invest in companies you believe in.
I think that is an excellent note to end on, is, you know, supporting brands that are supporting sustainability. Those are the brands you should be buying from. That will be it today on Live to Sustain. Today we heard from Aaron Taylor and heard about some of his experience in sustainable fashion. And we heard a little bit from Laura about one company named Reformation, a sustainable fashion company, and their struggles with trying to be sustainable. And we also heard about another company. What was the name of that company?
Elizabeth Suzanne.
Elizabeth Suzanne. I think they were a Tennessee-based company.
And we'll put it all in the show notes.
Ah, okay. We'll have these links to these companies in the show notes. All right. Thanks for listening, and we will hear you next time.
Be sure to check out our website, livetosustain.com, and follow us on Instagram @livetosustain.